Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Care to Read Room. You've got your Omi Anchor 7 live coming to you straight from my studio. I'd like to welcome each and every one of you this evening, and I'd like to say come on in and have a seat. Our chat rooms are now open. We have guest number 14253. We'd like to say hello, guest number 14253. You could come in the room if you like. We're on the air now. We are officially on the air. And ladies and gentlemen, I am your advocate. I am your advisor, and I'm your Mollywog, your mother too. I'm here to serve you. Whatever you like, I'm here to serve you. And thank you so much for joining me. And how are the children this evening? We'd like to welcome each and every one of you. This is a session that will be covered over the topic of not Nature's Remedy, which is put up on the screen. Our new billboards will have to go up starting tomorrow. We're working on the topic of looking at our communal settings, our community, and just refurbishing our whole community over again. We talked a little bit about how our urban settings are really in need of an overhaul. So we are talking about how can we change our communities through doing a grassroots reconstruction. That's right. At one time, we used to live in a communal setting, and we worked in that communal effort. And we're trying to get that back again, ladies and gentlemen. We want to get those days back again, but we can't do that without the cooperation of our brothers and sisters. So we're asking our brothers and sisters to be a part of sharing their input and telling us what are the necessary things that we need to do to get a grassroots movement again and get that tribal effect back again. We talked a little bit yesterday about the benefit of having a communal setting in our African-American community. How would it benefit the woman, the single woman, and how would it benefit women who do not have relationships and that are out of relationships because our men are locked away? How would it benefit them to have a polygamous situation in the community? So we're going to be touching upon those topics again today, and we're going to also talk about those giants that are out there in the music industry that have the capability of turning our communities around with just a little donation. They have the capability of turning our communities around with their support financially and morally as well. But who is stopping these giants from assisting the black movement? Who is stopping these giants from intervening and helping a cause such as the cause that Dr. Martin Luther King had and Malcolm X had and many others? And who are some of the people that were out there in the forefront that were helping? I know Billie Holiday was very much involved with the movement, so much so that she struck out against injustice. Nina Simone was also one of them who wrote records and songs like Goddamn Mississippi, and whose music was banned from the United States, and she was actually ostracized from this country and was told that she could not play her music in the United States of America. She fought vividly and feverishly to fight against injustice and racism. However, being a music artist, she had a little clout. She had a little financial ability to stand out because she could pull her music from any place and not play it, and she could boycott playing her music, or she could use her band to make a difference and prevent certain things from happening to blacks in the community. She had authority, in other words. And she was being told, if you continue to be in the movement, we're going to ask you to leave the country. And she talked about this openly, ladies and gentlemen, and we're going to be talking about those artists and what those artists could have done for the movement and how we could be looking at a better situation in our urban settings. We would not be looking at closed down buildings and businesses that are no longer in existence. We would be looking at flourishing cities in the urban setting if we could have taken money from people like Michael Jackson. Right here in Indiana, I grew up with Michael Jackson and his family, not too far from where I lived on the west side of town. Michael Jackson was singing around the same time myself and others were out there singing. Michael Jackson was just from around the way. That's right. He was a commoner, ladies and gentlemen, and we grew up with him. And some of those young men went to school with other fellow comrades who knew them personally. Now, the question is, did they have a debt to pay to Indiana? Were they committed to come back here and to do something for the desolate city? Were they responsible for coming back in a communal setting, lifting up the people here, giving us a better and a right standing financially to start our city over again? Were they obligated? Did they father think, that they should come back here and do something. I think he did. And just about in a few minutes, we're going to talk about that and bring it to the light. Right now, I'm going to get up front and personal with you, ladies and gentlemen, and just tell you that, yes, we have a lot to do and a lot to say. This evening. You're in the Care to Read room if you're wondering where you are. And we're about to go over to our Talking Cure area, and we're going to lift up praises and acknowledge Oladulmare. And if you'll stand with me in a position of prayer as we pour libation, you are to say Ashe. I like to pour libations for my mother's spirit and my father's spirit, but I like to give acknowledgement to Oladulmare, who is the God of the earth, who brought forth heaven and earth. And I say Ashe. I like to pour libation to my mother's spirit, Yamanja, and I say Ashe. I pour libation to Obatala, and I say Ashe. I like to call on my heroes and sheroes, Sheik Ez Diop, Nina Simone. I like to call on Harriet Tubman, Sweet Coretta King, Dr. Martin Luther King, Dr. John, Henry Clark, Dr. Carruthers, and I ask if we will be able to stand on their shoulders. And as we crawl through the Mayasa and we come down the middle passage, allow us to call forth those unknown names, unbeknown to us, the knowing names and the ones that we've never met. We call forth those ancestors and ask them to be present here with us today to complete the circle. And we say, Ashe. Ladies and gentlemen, I'd like to point out to you once again our topic and discussion. The billboards are going to be changed. As you know, we were changing them yesterday. However, this particular one still has the Nature's Remedy on it. We've transitioned from Nature's Remedy, and we have gone on to the topic of the benefit of living in a tribal society. And I'm going to equate this to the concept of Buddhists. Buddhists believed in the concept of Buddhists believed in the concept of a communal concept. And the Eightfold Mission was based on a communal concept and believing that if I prosper, you prosper. And if you are advancing yourself, then the whole community advances itself. And that's a communal concept in a nutshell. And that's what the Buddhists believe, living in a communal concept. They didn't believe that there was a self. There is no such thing as a self in the Buddhist belief. There could not be a self because the self is forevermore fluxing and changing. So you would not necessarily be the same person that you were tomorrow, that you were yesterday, because those entities will be changing and forevermore changing. But they believed in the fact that you did not have to quarrel over whether or not there was a self, that if you believe collectively in a communal concept, then we all exist, and we all exist in one concept, one mind, one concept. And that's what we're trying to get people to see today, that we can live in that communal concept. Now, most of our entertainers at one time, back when we had the Sam Cooke, Marvin Gaye, back when we had musicians like Nina Simone, who fought and went out on the stage and performed in a position of defending our philosophies and our belief system, such as a communal belief system. Those people really labored in love at their pianos, at their instruments, but they also labored out on the floor when they went out to perform, because they were up against two types of racism, a racism on the stage and in the community, just like when World War II, we had racism abroad and stateside. So there was a war going on, a constant war, just as there is one going on today. There are people that are interested in our entertainers, and we don't own ourselves anymore. We can be bought out at the drop of a hat, ladies and gentlemen. I know about the entertainment business because I was in it. And you can't pull anything in the wool over my eyes, because I know the deals being made all the time, and sellouts, and people being brought out and a scapegoat all the time. And people are actually taken off this planet in exchange for that filthy lucre, and trying to make sure that they can put somebody in their back pocket and control them and buy them out. Now, Michael Jackson's from my hometown here in Indiana. I can talk openly about him and candid about him and affectionately about him because he belongs to us. He's from our hometown, from around the way. And we like to think here in this hometown that we helped to groom him to be the person that he was. Yes, everyone knows he was a billion-dollar man and that he was the man. And everyone knows that he called the shots. But my question was, during his last days, was he calling all the shots? And was he able to make the proper adjustments that he wanted to make? And has every stone been overturned to look into what really did happen to Michael Jackson during that night they found him dead. What really happened? And my question and others' questions are the same. Do we really know what happened? And are we still baffled over it? And why aren't there any court cases going on to overturn what really happened to Michael Jackson? Now, I'm not going to yell too loud about this because I know there's a lot of people now asking, for that matter, what happened to Whitney Houston? And the verdict is still not out. How come when so many of our heroes die, we write them off and we act as if they've been demonized and it's not necessary to ask that question? But in the minds of most people, they're asking that question. Did Michael know this doctor previously to becoming tied up in drugs? Did he have a relationship with him before? Or was he an escape goat? Now, I'm going to put that out there to you guys, ladies and gentlemen. Our chat rooms are open. We got some people out there in the chat room. Go ahead and type away number 14253. Tell me, what do you think? What do you think could have actually happened to Michael? Was he a junkie? Was he already tied into drugs? Or did someone just introduce him to this gentleman and he eventually became hooked on drugs in 1 week? Or was he always an addict? Now, my question is this. Michael was ready to make a change. Oh, yeah, he was ready to make that change because he made it known that he was ready to make that change. Now, most people knew that Michael was valuable, dead or alive, and he had the capability of producing millions, but he was probably worth more to some dead if he couldn't produce the work. So here we have a commodity. A rich commodity, and something happens and something goes wrong where he's not able to produce all the shows. But nobody questions it. My question is, again, they're writing books now about what really happened to Michael Jackson. We ought to be asking, what really did happen to him? I'm just going to leave it out there. And for those of you who want to elaborate on it, call in and give me your opinion. Now, once again, the movement. You got a black movement, and you got black folks trying to pick themselves up, trying to reestablish themselves. They need a savior. They look towards Michael Jackson as being a savior. Maybe Michael could come here in this town, and maybe he can plant the seeds of hope and bring funds back in and give us jobs again. Maybe he can overlook the fact that this is lonely Gary, Indiana, but it's yet, and still in all, it's his hometown. He might favor us once again and grace us on the stage and bring back institutions up established. Now, if that is the case, and if Michael Jackson knew that Gary was worthwhile saving, don't you think he would come back here to try to save this city? Don't you think that because he built the city that he wouldn't come back here with his father and try to lay a foundation? Yes, he would. And I know he wanted to. Now, you got other great people moving out of our midst, such as Nina Simone. People didn't even breathe about Nina Simone leaving the country. The beautiful, elegant music and lyrics that she wrote. She was a classical piano player, ladies and gentlemen. She was headed to be a classical piano player. But they refused to accept her because of racism. She had everything it took because they trained her. The Europeans trained her and skilled her into becoming a classical piano player. However, she was disturbed with racism and what was going on in the community. She was living in a communal setting because she was a priestess. She practiced priesthood. And they knew it. And they knew that she was connected to the movement. And they knew that she loved her people. And they knew that she would do just about anything to get the word out to the people. And she was so doggone mad about what was going on in Mississippi, she wrote a song about it. The song was banned, and then she was refused. They were refusing to play any of her music and banished her from this country. And she left and went to Paris. And resided there and periodically came back here to this country. I'm working on research on Nina Simone right now. It is my desire to bring the great music back that Nina Simone has sang. I'm working on different pieces right now, and I would love to do a rendition of Nina Simone's music, because little is known about the work she did in the struggle. Little is known about her ability to be a modern-day Moses and her ability to stand up and fight for the causes of black. Her music depicted, and she talked about it in her interviews, how she was saddened by what was happening to our black people. Nevertheless, to be young, gifted, and black is a message to our young black people. Everyone who is a songstress should be picking up her music and her lyrics, thinking about redoing it. She's a monumental giant. And over in Paris right now, they are building institutions and museums after Nina Simone and establishing her as a legacy. And we are not making a peep about what she did for our country. There should be a national anthem set up for her, young, gifted, and black. And she should also be ushered back into this country and given a day of celebration. I had a chance to email her daughter and tell her daughter of my interest in her work. And I will eventually create this monumental presentation of her work to the best of my ability. I think she ought to be celebrated. I think she ought to be commemorated for the things she did to bring the gap and close the gap of disparity of black people, and to bring the music that says something. Now, there's a lot of us out here creating music that doesn't say anything and doesn't speak to the movement or the consciousness of the movement. And I'm saying right now, we've got to be more conscientious about taking our money once we get money and become affluent and putting it back into the urban settings and using it to make a more communal setting. Because you can't get any more rich by taking your money on the other side of the track. You must learn to figure out how to recirculate it back into your black communities to create that communal effect. Now, these are two giants we talked about. Now, there's another one. I wonder if anybody knows who that other giant is. If you're out there and in the chat room and you know who that other giant is that we're speaking of, and you'd like to type her name in the chat room, please type her name in there. She just recently made her transition from us this year, and her name is Whitney Houston. Another tragic death of a sister who was pulling herself together, who had decided she was going to walk upright and walk away from drugs, and who no more wanted to be inundated with drugs than a man in the moon, because she was on her way up, just making a movie in Sparkle, having a lead role. I don't think it was in Whitney Houston to turn back to drugs. I really don't. And I don't believe for one minute that she died in that bathtub on her own. And there's a mystery going on around her death and Michael's death as well. But all of it will come to light. I don't have all the answers, folks. Now, you can call in and give your opinion, but these are giants that could have done something for us financially in our midst, who could have helped the communal setting pull together, knit itself back together, create homes and communities that we are operating and functioning under. And Michael Jackson wanted to do these things, and so did Michael Jackson's family. Many times they wanted to come back here to this city and make a change, and he knew that that was his obligation. I believe Michael will come out of the grave to come back here to Gary, Indiana, to finish a job unfinished. I believe Michael Jackson is going to hunt down his assailant who perpetrated taking his life. I believe that beyond a shadow of a doubt. He's not in the grave. He is still yet lurking and walking to and fro this earth to discover who plotted and schemed against him. And it had to be a plot and a scheme. There was large amount of money at stake. I don't have all the detail, folks. I don't even pretend to have all the detail. But I put that conversation out there for you to ponder over. Because we're building communities and we're doing grassroots work. This is what I know. And the best thing to do is find a solution to our current problem today. I'll leave that other problem up to the courts to find a solution to, because I'm sure his father and his parents are going to pursue it. However, until then, we're still going to have to find a way to bring about more communal living and lifestyle in the hood. How do you suggest we do it? Do we just start all over again? Or do we pull in the resources that we have? I tell you what we ought to do. Devalue money. Take the money's value away and create our own filthy lucre, whether it be carry shells or borrowing system, so we can begin to build our own communities and build them from a communal concept. And therefore, we all become rich off the richness of one or two people. But we all prosper, because that is a concept of communal living. And we must understand that our mothers and babies are not bastards, that they are under the umbrella of fathership. And we can no longer talk about having single heads of the household being broken families, when in slavery, most of the time, the master had already sold the husband out to the next bidder. So the women never were at home in the first place with their husbands. There was no such thing as a traditional marriage for slaves. So we were not accustomed and we were not given the privilege of having dual households in slavery. So we must understand we're going to have to redefine our marriages, redefine our relationships, and we're going to have to redefine what's communal for us in our communities. And we need to do that right away. And ladies and gentlemen, if you know any author or writer that is looking to bring forth some opportunities to reconnect back to the movement, then you need to direct them to your urban cities, and you need to bring them in, and you need to have them tie themselves into your concept of communal living to help build our communities back up, because they are dying and they are being crushed to the ground, but they will rise again. And they will rise again, and you will see it in the eyes of your lovers, in the eyes of your babies. So look for it, ladies and gentlemen, because we are looking for God here on this earth, and we're going to see it in the eyes of our children.